right, it's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Lots to talk about tonight. We've got IU baseball heading into the tournament with a very bad weekend and needing to win the Big Ten tournament over the weekend, or over the week, rather, and some tough sledding ahead. We've got NBA conference finals once again continuing on. Cavs hold a 2-1 advantage after losing Game 3 up in Toronto, and Oklahoma City wins Game 3 at home after winning on the road in Game 1 at Golden State, and they now hold a 2-1 lead in that conference final. We'll talk about all that here in just a little while. But speaking of the NBA, or potentially the NBA early entrant draft deadline is March 25th, or May 25th, rather. That is Wednesday. So two more days for IU players Troy Williams and James Blackman Jr. to decide whether they're going to stick in the draft or whether they are going to come back to school. And no word yet. Plenty of articles being written one way or another. Disappointing this, whatever that. Doesn't appear they'll get drafted on either one. Who knows what's really going to happen? But Glass, at this point, we don't really know for sure what is going to happen. We haven't got much of an indication. Either way, they've gone through the process. They've listened to all the information. They've worked out with a lot of players or a lot of teams. Yogi Ferrell, of course, working out with teams, is in the draft. But we don't know yet whether we're going to have these two players or not have these two players for next year and what that means for this IU roster.
Yep, and I don't know why they would come this far and not wait till the final seconds to say when they were going to make that said decision. But if it's Wednesday, that's when it is. And I think what's the interesting point of all of this is it's helping the kid, it's hurting the program. We sound like a broken record, but it's true. But you haven't seen anything that has, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, it hasn't solved the issue of whether you should or you shouldn't. You would think after about 3 days of meeting with teams and general managers,
you get an idea.
You'd have a really good idea about what you need to do or not do. And I don't think anybody on a general manager, head coaching, president side of things thinks, well, we had this deal the second week and whatever it was, and in the next 3 weeks, they're going to figure all that out and put it all together. I'm not close enough to this process to understand the length of it, but that's starting to make me, I don't want to say itch a little bit, because I think it's fun for the kids, but do you need, how many weeks has it been to get these guys to be evaluated and worked out for everybody? I guess if you got to go to 25 teams, that takes a couple 3 or 4 weeks to do. It's great that these kids got all this money to travel all over the country and do that, because if they haven't signed an agent, Dave, and they're going to have to come back, they got to pay for this out of their pocket somehow.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, but it's really interesting that there is a lot of people still in the draft that you have heard, and I'm not just talking about IU kids. I'm talking about Melo Trimble. I'm talking about Caleb Swanigan. I'm talking mm-hmm. about some guys that you thought, oh, wow, those are really good college players, that everybody would just assume they would walk into an NBA workout center or pre-draft camp or five-on-five, whatever they do in those things, and set themselves apart from it. But you haven't heard Swanigan say, yeah, I'm coming back. You haven't heard Trimble. I don't think he's made any formal
right.
announcement either.
Right.
It's been kind of the guys that you thought, oh, you went to the draft. Oh, and you're back. Okay. Well, mm-hmm. I think the most notable one I would say off the top of my head was Justin Jackson, the kid from North Carolina, last week said, yeah. Hey, I got it. I'm going back. No big deal. So it's part of the game. I don't know if it's part of the status these days. The longer you stay in, the quote-unquote better. I don't know.
Yeah,
That's what's fascinatingly strange about it. And I don't know if that's helping anything in this process get any better, except that the experience is there. The exposure is there, but after a couple of days at a camp, I don't know if general managers are watching you and they've seen what they've seen, the individual workouts shed some light. It's a very bizarre process. I think it's really good for the kids, but I think as Zach Osterminder, I'm looking at his article right now, friend of the program. I'm not sure this is what they wanted to do.
Well,
with this all. said and done.
You got to hope that what they're doing is getting information from multiple sources with some, in-person workouts, because you got to figure that the general manager's been watching these guys quite a bit to begin with. So they've got a pretty good idea whether you're good enough, whether you're not good enough. They've been scouting these people. It's not just starting during these workouts. Now, yes, you can be in person. You can hear it, I suppose, a little bit in person. So from that standpoint, it's got to help the kids, I would think. But like you said, you know, is it really going to change anybody's mind to have a 1 hour workout with a general manager in their home building? At this point in time, I have a hard time seeing that. Now, at the combine, we've seen this in the NFL, where a good combine workout can, you know, propel somebody who maybe doesn't deserve to be propelled. Is that the case in the NBA? Again, they've got guys internationally scouted as well, if not better than some of these high school or these college kids, rather. So you're going to walk into the Clippers arena and work out for an hour with somebody and change their mind and make yourself a draft pick? I don't see it.
The best thing you see at the end of the day of this is, if it doesn't work for the kids, they can at least go back to school, because that wasn't the case in the old days.
Right.
And it is about allegedly getting an education. It is allegedly about
not
being
getting information directly from them. I mean, that's got to be good.
Instead of, being surrounded by people that tell you everything you want to hear, and kids maybe not making the best decision. So the process being the process, it's the first year for it, so you're going to hear more and more stories like this even after the 25th deadline about when kids come back and tell you what was really good about it or really bad about it, whether they go or stay or whatever else. And then you figure it out and you move on from there. But it's not easy for the coaches. I get that. I would think the coaches would want it this way instead of the other way, because if kids have to come back, they're not left in a lurch where they're going. Now, the kids at higher agents can't do anything about it. They've made a conscientious decision to do that, but the ones that haven't, you hope they can pay for their debt someday down the road, and you hope the information you get. But there's an old saying that goes back a lot longer than radio and a lot longer than anything else: you can lead a horse to water, but you can't always make him drink. And there are people that will hear the right things and not believe it, hear the wrong things and not believe it, because that's what they want to do. And we've talked about that for the last month. If these kids want to play professional basketball and go through all this, maybe this gets them a better shot somewhere overseas. Maybe this gives them a better shot that shows their work ethic by saying, hey, I went to all these places, I did all this, I'm in shape, look, I've been doing this for 6 months, I can come in and boom, help your team right now in Netherlands or France or wherever it could be. So if that's what's best for the kid in the long run, that's fine. But I think the best thing for the kid in the long run is there's a chance to come back to school. I don't know if that's best for the coaches, but that's not necessarily
you're not going to get a lot of people that argue that what's best for the coaches is the top priority after the last several years of yelling at the NCAA,
they get paid, it's hard to feel sorry for a guy making $4.5 million and wondering if their prize McDonald's recruit's going to come back.
I'm not sure at the end of the day. I mean, it's good that they have the chance to hear this. 333-2665 is our phone number. It's good that they have the access to the people with the information and the people who are doing the evaluating. I don't think there's any question about that. I just wonder whether part of that process is being overrun. I read John Calipari said at one point in time his entire roster, including walk-ons, were going to go through the process. Look, I understand why you do that, because you want to make everybody on your comes to your program feel like the NBA is their destination. You want to make it big time like that. But is that bogging it down for people who really have a chance to do it? I mean, if you tell me Tim Priller is going to go through the NBA draft process so he can hear it,
absolutely.
Okay, I mean, you might as well use the information. But then again, you got guys like Troy who actually have a chance to get drafted. Now, maybe it's a long shot still, but he's actually got a shot. He's on the fringes at the very least. Does that make the whole thing longer for everybody else?
Yeah, and I don't know. And the whole thing about being drafted, too, I think that's more of a cred thing than anything else, because everybody knows you want to go to camp as a free agent anyhow and make the team, not as a second-round pick, because you're slotted into a slot monetarily. They have to pay you this, and it's better, because if you do come in as a free agent and play well and they did miss you, you have a chance to make more money because you're a free agent instead of holding draft rights. So there is some economics to this as well, but it is a whole new world. It is a brave new world. It's not as easy as anymore saying you're going pro and you're done, see you later, or you're a senior and you don't have any more eligibility. That's the simple part. Now it's this waiting game of 6 weeks. Is it 6 weeks when the season ends?
I believe so, yeah.
St. Patrick's Day, right?
The
week after the 24th. So we're at the 24th of May tomorrow. That's a month. So that's 2 months. That's 8 weeks. That's a long time. You should have everything figured out by now.
The deadline was April 24th to declare.
Sure, but again, your season ends on March 24th.
Well, the first week of April is basically what that ends up being.
Yeah, so for somebody like Troy and James Blackman Jr., which I don't even know where James Blackman Jr. is at with his injury. Tom Crane has said before that he's nowhere close. That's his words, not mine. But Troy's had 10 weeks, essentially, to do things for people. And I think the answer was known earlier. I think the answer was probably meted out just by the facts that he hasn't spent a whole lot of time back on campus.
Right.
You can kind of connect the dots there, but I guess we don't know until Wednesday. Is Indiana going to have some kind of press conference? Are they going to release this via Instagram? I don't know either. So we'll be here Wednesday night. We'll let you know.
Yep.
I don't know. Do you have to wait till midnight on Wednesday night?
Well,
I
mean,
it's like
them,
income taxes. Do you have to have it stamped?
I don't know.
You got to have it rubber stamped by in the mailbox.
I'll go with midnight. I haven't seen anything otherwise.
But again, it's the biggest decision of these kids' lives, either going and staying out or coming back, because they're going to have to answer the questions coming back. That's going to be, hey, what'd you hear? What'd they tell you? What'd they tell you? What'd you hear? That's going to be the first questions for any organized meetings. It's going to be the first questions their coaches are going to face. Or it's going to be you stayed out and you never hear from them until they make an NBA roster and start making noise in the league. So it's a very big life decision, as well as a big basketball decision.
No,
and we'll see who's ready to make it, and we'll see who's ready not, and we'll see if there's any math that needs to be done upon arrival.
That's exactly right. And of course, to do that, the problem would be if Troy Williams and James Black can both come back. So we will see. Obviously, as you said, Wednesday, hopefully we'll know one way or another. We've got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Looking at the NBA Conference Finals, no surprise that Cleveland would be leading at this point, but losing Game 3 up in Toronto, we kind of figured they would lose one of them. But I wouldn't call it a horrible shock, but it's certainly a bit of a surprise. Oklahoma City wins Game 1 at Golden State, now is up 2-1 in the series, and we're starting to see, I don't think cracks is fair for Golden State just yet, but we're starting to see some bumps in the road as Steph Curry, who, of course, dealt with a knee injury earlier, now is dealing with an elbow injury potentially. And after the other night, after last night, Draymond Green may very well end up with a suspension. We've seen Dante Jones suspended for a shot to the groin. And Draymond Green got his leg up in the air and hit Steven Adams in the groin. We'll see if the NBA does anything about that. Again, Glass, I don't want to say this is the cracks, because this is a 73-9 team, and they certainly look reasonably healthy and reasonably together still at this point in time. But Oklahoma City is not back down at all.
Why would they? You can't now. It's a conference finals, a chance to play for an NBA championship. I wouldn't think Oklahoma City would back down. Not if they just beat San Antonio. Full of confidence. San Antonio had 60. How many wins? 65 wins.
Something
that was
like
that. That wasn't an ace seed they beat to get here. They should be confident. They had to win games on San Antonio's home court that a lot of people didn't do throughout the year. What was it that San Antonio had the best home record in the league, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and how many games did they win? They won half their series games on their home court,
yep,
on San Antonio's home court. So they win game one of the series on Golden State's home court. It's been an interesting series in the sense, what happened in game two? Well, Golden State blew out the Thunder.
Yeah.
And then the Thunder returned in favor last night. Obviously, this game was tied 40-40 at one point, finished 133-105. Nobody from either starting lineup, I don't think, played much of more than a minute in the fourth quarter, because it was a 34-point victory, a 34-point spread, rather, at the time. But to see Oklahoma City pour it on from the second quarter, when it was tied at 40-40, it was 34-28 after one. So it's a game. It's 40-40, nine minutes ago in the second quarter.
Yeah.
And then Oklahoma City forgot to miss. Golden State quit defending. Oklahoma City was hitting threes from everybody, and their mother was hitting threes for Oklahoma City last night. It seemed like during that run, they were all going in. Anthony Roberson's a greenskeeper at the country club, is a buddy of mine. Andre Roberson hit 3 out of 5. The guy shoots about 8% from the three-point line. So when that goes in and the court has to get spread, and all of a sudden Russell Westbrook, you can't stop him going to the basket. You can't stop Kevin Durant doing anything. They go for how many? 60-something? I just lost the box score right here in front of me. It's now gone. 33-30. Yeah, that's not bad. That's exactly the formula that Oklahoma City needs. Mm-hmm. The other best part about this formula was they didn't have to play a lot of minutes. But again, you point to the Golden State and say, well, neither did they.
Yeah.
It wasn't a game where you had to grind it out where they have to keep their starters in. They did not. But the Oklahoma City big lineup is giving Golden State problems. Mm-hmm. If it was a three-game series, it'd be over with, but thankfully it's not. But I think in the totality of all this, before we get to Draymond Green and any of that nonsense, if Golden State wins tomorrow, this is no different than Golden State winning two at home and Oklahoma City winning two at home. But I think Oklahoma City won't have any extra confidence because Golden State will have done exactly to them as what they did. And then you turn this into a three-game series with two in Golden State and one in Oklahoma City. And that's a big game, obviously game four.
What you're seeing out of Oklahoma City so far with a two-game to one lead is what we said they needed to do and what everybody has said they needed to do. They had to have their two stars fire big time, and they are firing big time. 63 points the other night on 20 of 34 shooting, 21 of 23 from the line. The whole team, 33 of 37 from the line. They're not just doing it with, you know, bombs from outside like you see some teams manage to do. 8 of 25 from three-pointers, nice, but
not
great. Yeah,
but all those were in that run, it seemed like, when they opened it up. And you've seen Indiana basketball do that to people. It's not how many you make, it's how many you make
when
in a
you
short
make them
period
what it does
of time.
The other team, right?
Exactly. And I don't know how many they nailed in the second half of the second quarter into the third quarter, but it seemed like it was all
well. And let's talk about that third quarter for a second, because they had a big lead at that point in time, and you still got, you know, 24 minutes or whatever it is left on the game clock coming out of the locker room. That's when you see a team like Golden State who can shoot the lights out of the ball. You know, that's when you see them maybe make a run. Instead, Oklahoma City just kept it going. They had 45 points in the third quarter, and I mean, it was no nonsense at that point in
time.
The
best way to beat Golden State is to get the game as high as you can. Score.
Well, and especially when you're hitting.
And hope they have a night like they did. They didn't shoot it very well. And when they don't shoot it very well, they keep trying to shoot it very poorly. You saw those shots in game number one. Those were all fine and good when they went in the first half. They were all fine and good, but when they got to the fourth quarter and scored 14 points or whatever that number was, or whatever that the terrible stretch they had, and then Kerr comes out and talks about, well, you know, we probably shot those too fast. Well, you don't talk about them when they go in like that. Mm-hmm. That's their offense. They kind of live by it and they kind of die by it because they don't have a lot of guys that can get to the hole or want to get to the hole. If you're Curry and Thompson and you shoot what they do from the three-point line and you've got a window of opportunity, your first thought is, I'll get three instead of two. So when they don't have guys driving in the basket, when they don't have guys grabbing offensive rebounds and getting putbacks, and when they don't make threes, it sounds easy to beat them, but remember, you have to execute and score on the other side to make them chase out. Golden State can take all the layups they want, down 28. Oklahoma City, go ahead. Mm-hmm. You're not going to beat us. We're not going to let you hit seven threes in a row and get back into the ball game. That's what they did. They locked up, made Curry work hard, made Thompson work harder, and they didn't get anything from Draymond Green. It's not a huge formula how to beat Golden State. It's very difficult to execute. And what Oklahoma City has is they have athletics, they have size, they have length, and they have guys to clog the paint. So it looks a lot easier to take those three-point shots. And you don't make them, that's what happens.
Golden State got a better performance from its bigs in Game 2, not anywhere near in Game 3. And as you said, I mean, that big lineup for Oklahoma City has changed things around a
bit.
Yeah,
but go back to Game number 2 and tell me what Ibaka did, because I've got his Game 3 right in front of me. Ibaka did nothing in Game 2. Well, last night he gets 14-8, plays 32 minutes. Hits two threes. That's all you got to know.
Yeah.
Serge Ibaka is knocking down threes.
He had 3 points in 30 minutes, eight rebounds, three steals. But
yeah, that's not the contribution. Because what you don't beat Golden State rebounding. You beat Golden State scoring.
Yeah.
And what Oklahoma City did last night, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys in double figures. They get another solid game from Waiters, who didn't take 100 shots to get
anywhere. And the winner in each of these games so far has been a double-digit rebounding lead, as you mentioned. You know, it's not necessarily the hugest key, but it has been a difference in all
shots,
three of them by quite a bit.
You miss shots, you don't score points.
You don't get them.
And that's the deal. And Golden State, there's some crazy stats at Golden State last night about how many points they didn't score. You know, this is a team that gets up and down the court, and fast break points are huge to them, and they didn't have any of it. And it was eerily strange to watch because they looked out of sync. And you know why they were out of sync? Because Oklahoma City's long. They get to shooters quickly. They can switch a lot of things because they have a lot of like-for-like players. But Golden State's defense has always been – Golden State's defense isn't bad.
No, it's good.
It's usually they're pretty good.
They're more physical than people want to give them credit for.
They usually rebound pretty well. They're usually in passing lanes pretty well. But when you don't make those errors and turn it over, again, you beat really good teams, you got to do a lot of things right. Mm-hmm. You can't have – if Durant gets 67, good for him. That's fine. But you usually win in the rebound battle. You usually get into the foul line more. You're usually committing less turnovers. That's how you beat really good teams, because you keep scoring. They don't. You don't give them second chances and easy putbacks. You make them fight for every second shot. And that's what Oklahoma City's done. And they're good. Oklahoma City is good. Golden State's regular season record was historically good. That's what makes this so captivating. But when if Oklahoma City loses at home in game four, guess what everybody's going to swing right back to? Ah, there's the Golden State we remembered and what we did and what we thought of and everything else. That's why this theater is great, because Oklahoma City isn't a pushover. They have depth. They have two superstar players, just like Golden State's got about 2.5. I'm not going to throw Green in there yet. He's awfully, awfully good.
Yeah.
But he's not as good as a scorer as Thompson. And I think that's what makes Golden State go, is when Green has to be the fourth option to score, Golden State's unbeatable.
Sure.
When he has to be the second option to score, he's not a good enough perimeter player, in my opinion, to make that happen. He's great when he gets 10 assists, yeah. 5 steals, 8 blocks, 20 rebounds.
He has some big games, no question. The other night was not one of them. 6 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 turnovers. And the play where, you know, depending on how you look at this, it's either an innocuous flail trying to get a foul call in the lane, or it's a blatant kick to the groin. He's known as a pest. There's no question about that. Stephen Adams said something about it the other day. He wasn't really complaining as much as he was saying something about it, because he was asked about it. But now the NBA is going to be looking at whether he's raising that leg into the groin of Stephen Adams.
Well,
and they just made a decision either yesterday or today on Dante Jones with a groin shot. I won't call it similar because it wasn't the same kind of play. But,
Dante Jones roundhouse the guy.
There is half a precedent set. There's not a precedent set because it's not the same play. But literally in the last 2 days, they've made a decision on something like this.
Green has the ball, goes up for a shot, gets his arm grabbed, throws his arms both out, and throws his legs out, and he kicks him.
Throws one leg up into the groin of Stephen Adams.
Where he's going that way?
Yes. He's trying to flail to get a call.
Absolutely,
there's no
right.
question about
it. And that's where it stops for me. I don't think anybody at that level is looking to kick anybody there. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
You can argue with it. The commissioner could tell me I'm wrong. Are they going to rule on this in the next 100 years?
Know.
Or
better,
what are they going to do with that there? But that play, the other angle to that play showed the frustration. And that's what happens. Listen to this. The 8:36 of the first half. The final 8:36. This is mind-numbing.
Yeah.
This team had 73 wins.
Mm-hmm.
7 points, 2 of 23.
Yeah.
Thunder had 32 points, 9 of 16.
Oh, it was
now,
a total
9 of 16
in the
is
second
great.
Half. Yeah.
But that's not 11 of 13, 10 of 12
it's not
threes.
It's not absurd, no.
It's not at all, but it's absurd how Golden State missed 21 mm-hmm. of 23 shots. The 72 points, the most the Thunder have ever scored in a postseason first half, and that's with a defensive team that's Golden State. This isn't a 1-8 series.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a 2-7. This is the best regular season basketball team, and they scored 72 first half points.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you got to give credit to Oklahoma City there. And listen to this. Their roster, this is their roster. The pick numbers. Ready? Kevin
mm-hmm.
Durant, number 2 overall.
Mm-hmm.
Westbrook, number 4 overall.
Yep.
Stephen Adams, number 12 overall. Andre Roberson, 26. Ibaka, 24. That's how you do it, folks.
Yeah, I mean,
pick them. Hear anything about free agents in there?
No.
Hear anything about picked up in a trade from anywhere?
No.
Maybe Ibaka, I think they got in a trade from Memphis somewhere.
Yeah, Ibaka's been around a little bit.
But again, you got your draft right. You got the pieces right.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the Pacers, hey, 26 and 24.
Seattle picked Serge Ibaka.
Well, there you go. So that was back. So he wasn't. That's why I thought he changed teams.
He was, yeah.
He did, but he stayed with the same organization.
Right there. Exactly right.
But that's the thing. That's how good you have to be in the draft, and we know that's coming up for the Pacers. But that's the facts, Jack, right there. You had all these different pieces work out. You had to have them all come into play at a certain time where they all can fit in the pay cap. And, again, this isn't some team of a bunch of ragtags that was thrown right. together and it's doing anything. These are big players, big picks on a big stage beating the best team in basketball.
Remember, they missed a or lost a superstar a couple years ago, too.
James Harden,
so,
who was another top 10 pick.
They could have had even more scoring, or certainly did at
you
one
run
point.
Run out of money,
and
Dave.
Recovered.
That's the other problem.
But recovered from that, so
yep.
That's pretty impressive. Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. There is another conference championship that is going on. Cleveland and Toronto. Cleveland now up 2-1 after Toronto won Game 3 up in Toronto the other evening. And not surprising that the number 2 seed with 56 wins would win a game. in this series, even though I think everybody was starting to write them off after the first couple of games. But you look at this game. First of all, I don't see anything that makes you think the Cleveland Cavaliers aren't going to come back and turn this right back in their favor. But if you look at what happened and what Cleveland did in particular, they've had times where they fall in love with the three-pointer and don't shoot it all that well. They did make 14 of them the other night. But 41 three-pointers is not really what they do well. What they do well is get to the basket.
Yep, and when you have athletic guards on the other team that are trying to lock down Irving and get the ball out of his hands and make other guys make decisions, is a really good adjustment, and that's what Toronto looked like to do. They tried to get physical with Cleveland, didn't let them get comfortable, didn't let them get into the flow, didn't let them get any rhythm, and they didn't let Irving go. He was 3-19. It's terrible.
Yeah.
There's no – if we're going to knock
– And three of 16 shooting threes for the three big guys.
If we're going to knock bad performances by Kyle Lowry, we're going to knock Kyrie Irving as well. Because
3 points from Kevin Love.
He's on a different level, and so is Kevin Love. And that's what happens when you don't win in this league. A lot of things don't go well. This is not the 80s where it's 145, 137, and each team's got four guys with 30 points.
Right.
That doesn't happen anymore. There's too much physicality. There's too many athletes that are too good, and that's what makes that Oklahoma City Golden State game just mind-numbing. It looked like all of a sudden Oklahoma City couldn't score, and then the same thing on Saturday night. It looked like all of a sudden Cleveland forgot how to play basketball, and you have to give the other team some credit for that. They put pressure on Cleveland. Cleveland hadn't been down more than what, double digits? Had they even been down double digits in the series? They were down 18 or 19 points in that game before losing it. So they put Cleveland in an uncomfortable situation, and sitting up like we've joked about, putting your feet up, you're rested, that's fine, but sometimes you need a reality check like that. Hey, a little...
That's right.
Wake up. They're playing for big money, too. They had 56 wins. How many Cleveland have?
That was a big game in Toronto, as we've said. I mean, their whole hockey country is done for the playoffs. So,
but there's no secret to why Toronto's going to beat you. And this is where you got to give the kid some credit, too. DeRozan, ESPN tweeted the stat out. He had 32 in game three. Great. Well, they're 5-0, and he scores at least 25.
Yeah.
It's not hard to figure out why Toronto's any good.
I mean, these two guys have got to score, and you saw Kyle Lowry in game two go walking off the floor at one point and go into the locker room, and they're wondering what the heck's going on with him. Is he going to get it back or not?
That's a 4-6-8 point game there, and it's a 12-2 run right after, and then the game's over.
Yeah.
And then he comes back a little bit later, and then he gets in foul trouble. I've never seen a point guard
at
that level get
make
in
some of
that
the dumb
much.
Stuff. Yeah.
Well, just a point guard by trade, it should be it's the leader of the team. It's the guy who's getting you into stuff, and you can't help when you've got three fouls in the first quarter, and you're getting your third foul 20 feet away from the basket on a little loose ball, legal screen type thing, which just blows your mind because the fouls he gets aren't even good fouls.
Right.
They're nitpicky. They're testy.
Yeah,
they're swipey.
No
he's not Kobe.
And he's facing Kyrie Irving. So, I mean, he's got one of the better point guards that he's playing
exactly
against.
Exactly right.
You let him go.
But he did that in the Pacers series.
Yeah,
and no offense
exactly
to Monte Ellis or George Hill. But
they're not Kyrie Irving.
Well, they're not. But he still was in foul trouble
in
most of those games because he's undisciplined. And he's letting his team down. He walks off the court. That's one thing. Okay, no big deal. You win game number three.
Right.
But the point is, you can't win if you're Toronto with him on the bench.
No, he's unreliable. Speaking of being reliable, though, out of the blue, Bismack Biyombo with 26 rebounds in this game. He's had a couple good games. He crushed the Pacers in one of the games also, and he's filling in for Valanciunas, who we hear is going to be back tonight. I mean, you're not going
to
get 26 rebounds out of this guy every night.
You
but how about
to.
The 39 minutes out of him two nights ago?
You'll need those. Valanciunas can grab a couple extra
for you
coming up on that.
We've seen him with 20-plus rebounds before.
It was funny, though, because we're a little bit older, and there's a lot of NBA fans that are a little bit younger, and people were crowing about how many rebounds that – wow, is that some kind of playoff record? And Mike Breen comes on during the game and says, well, Chamberlain had it at halftime once.
Yeah,
so no, it's not. It's not even close to being that. People forget Wilt, I think, averaged 52-4 and 28 rebounds one season averaged. Remember, there's 48 minutes in a game. So he scored a point a minute.
More.
More.
Yeah.
And then got a rebound every 30 seconds.
Yeah. It's pretty
good. Or every, whatever that math is. It's pretty good. I don't know if that math is any good or not. But
he was a good player. I think
he was.
I think they might have a statue for him somewhere.
But that's a whole different level of play. But how good was Biombo? He had 8 offensive rebounds. Yeah. He played 39 minutes. And guess what he didn't do? He didn't get into foul trouble.
Well, so the whole, let's the back this up the
because
second,
he has no Valanciunas to go to next.
Right, but
Scola is terrible.
Back this up to what we were just talking about. When Kyle Lowry, your point guard and one of your two leading scorers, and probably, I mean, one of the top 10 or 20 scorers in the league, because both of them average over 20 points, when he's generally speaking been letting you down and been kind of all over the place and you don't know what you're going to get out of him, he walks away and all this sort of thing, to get that out of a guy that nobody expects it out of is an enormous boost for the entire team, for the entire arena, and they desperately needed it, because the reason Kyle Lowry's walking away in game two is because he's destroyed at that point in time. They're getting their butt kicked for the second straight game. They know they don't have a chance anymore. He's given himself up on himself at that point in time. So they desperately need something out of this guy Biombo. Well, maybe tonight it's somebody else, but they got to have something.
It needs to be.
Other thing they have right now is making it a physical series and getting Cleveland into something where somebody gets kicked out.
And Valanciunas will help with that, because he's impossible to move out of the block. He's really hard to keep off the glass. We saw that firsthand in the Pacers series. And give Lowry some credit, though. He did have 20 last
night. No, he's better last night. No question.
He was. He contributed. But the Toronto had one of those games. They get 53 from their backcourt. They got to have. Remember, yeah. Durant and Westbrook got 63. Exactly. They got 53. They get 30 from their bench. Joseph and Patterson carrying the load again. 30 from your bench, 53 from your backcourt. That's 83. That's right. That's a really good start.
Yeah.
That's going to get you pretty close to where you need to be. But Toronto has shown they can win without Valanciunas, which will help them. Him coming back will boost that, because they didn't quote unquote need him last time out. It'll make Biombo more effective, because he won't need to log as many
fewer minutes,
and then he could be fresher in situations. And number two, Valanciunas being out the amount of time he's been out isn't going to give you 38 minutes tonight. He's not going to be, I wouldn't think, in shape for any of that.
Let me throw this at you. Maybe this doesn't make any sense, but Luis Scola has been nearly useless in this series,
except fouls.
Yeah, to the Raptors. Do you consider playing those two guys together, Valanciunas and Biombo, at least a portion? They're hoovering up the rebounds over here, and Cleveland is not a physical team, and Tristan Thompson is not really doing a whole hell of a lot in this series. You got Kevin Love, who's not exactly the most physical guy in the world. Yes, LeBron James for his size is, but he's not a big guy.
Everybody that's healthy in an NBA roster is going to play, especially a guy that started all year. So it's not going to be a question of whether if they don't start him, it doesn't matter.
He comes in the
first 4 minutes.
Big, physical, aggressive. That, to me, is what Toronto can do that Cleveland doesn't look like they can do.
Right, but the other part of that is Cleveland does have enough guys to shoot it from the outside, where somebody's going to have to guard screen and roll.
Right.
They figured it out really well. They forced Irving into bad decisions.
Wouldn't they rather have him shooting threes, though, and just kind of back off?
I would think so. I would think so. But Cleveland also has shown you they've been pretty good in what, 5 of the last 7 games? They've hit a ton of them.
Yeah.
And they've made people pay by 31, 14. By 21, by whatever it is. But they've shown you, as most good teams do, they are not one-dimensional. So where do you take your chances? I think you do exactly what Toronto did in Game 3. You force Kyrie Irving to give up the ball and make Love and make James and make Dellavedova and make everybody else make some decisions. So if you can bump and force and get Irving upset off his rocker – and you get maybe you get 4 for 17 tonight. Mm-hmm. I think Toronto would sign up for that immediately, if not sooner, and force King James to start firing up jumpers. Valanciunas is going to clog the lane up, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to help things. But LeBron, we haven't seen. Where's that LeBron game?
Yeah, I don't know.
Where is it?
It hasn't needed to yet.
Well, that's kind of where I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So, you know what? J.R. Smith can sit out there and pump threes all day. Someone's got to be able to take him in pick and roll. Usually Valanciunas' man will be that guy in pick and roll, because they want him away from the basket as well. So the adjustments that will be made, obviously you'll see a big one from Cleveland tonight. Where is the ball going to be when Toronto gets physical, gets trapping, gets after it?
Mm-hmm.
Where does it move? Two numbers.
Yeah.
That's where it's going.
Yeah.
Now, how do you slow him down? You definitely let him shoot threes all night.
Right.
You make James shoot, make him beat you from the 3-point line, because there's not many guys that can stop him or slow him down off the dribble.
Well, you got to figure Tyronn Lue is telling his team 41 3-point attempts, 16 free throw attempts.
It's not as easy.
They're better when they get to the basket. That's what they do.
It's not as easy as Steve Kerr made it look last year for first time coaches.
No, heck no.
Tyronn Lue is in a big spot here. He is a massive, massive favorite.
Yeah.
He has no back against the wall, us against them. Bull honky.
He should win this.
He needs to win this. He has the best player in the league, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much.
Or is that Russell Westbrook? Or is that Steph Curry? Or is that Kevin Durant? Or is that
– top five. Or is that
– and again, DeRozan, big game, needed it for his team. We knocked him a little bit on here for not beating up the sorry Pacers a little bit, but he gave you a big one. Mm-hmm. And if this gets to 2-2, again – the belief Toronto has is sometimes better. They've never been in this situation before, Dave. That's sometimes better than the numbers and everything else. If they believe they can play with Cleveland, that's half the battle with a young, inexperienced playoff team.
We will find out. They certainly didn't really show it against the Pacers.
They did not.
Here they are.
Game seven.
Here's their chance, and we'll see how they rallied tonight with Valanciunas coming back. Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Quick programming notes for you. We've got Reds baseball, but it's coming up later as they are on the West Coast. They're at the Dodgers for the next three nights, 10 o'clock all three nights. Tomorrow night we have Joe Smith Sports Talk live from Yogi's at the corner of 10th and Indiana, 6 o'clock. He will have behind the scenes with IU Athletic Director Fred Glass. Also talk to the new IU golf
Fishy.
Pro, Greg Bishop, the general manager over there at the IU golf, the golf course. We'll be back Wednesday, 6 o'clock, as always. So tune in then we'll have more Reds baseball on the weekend. We'll talk about that. And, oh, by the way, the Indy 500.
Which, gentlemen, start your engines. The 100th time we'll hear the cry of that coming up Sunday morning, 10 a.m. We'll take you through the pomp and circumstance of the back home again in Indiana, drivers or lady and gentlemen or however that works, start your engines. Yeah. The Purdue Marching Band playing the Star Spangled Banner, all the traditions that make this the greatest spectacle in racing. We'll have it all for you. I think it's our 68th time, Dave, having this on the airwaves. Joe and I are trying to dig up the official number on that, but a great day for the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500. Remember, it's not the 100th year because they were war years that were missed in that stretch. So this will be the 100th running of the 500.
James Hinchcliffe is your poll leader.
Some story there.
Yep. And interestingly, I've heard...
he almost died last year, right? He got a humongous wreck.
Yeah.
Unbelievable stories being written about that. And now he's going 230 and change and sitting on the poll. Yeah. So
almost,
nice day at the track.
Almost died on this track in particular. Also heard that reserve seating has been sold out for
reserve
this.
Seating
so
is.
We've talked for a long time. Well, how do you get the excitement back into the Indianapolis 500?
Stick around number.
Maybe it's a matter of time. Yeah, I mean, you
and
name
speed.
It.
Speed is the only way that's going to get people in the door who are not diehard racing fans.
Right.
You have to go fast again. Remember in the old days it was 236 and change.
I was up there.
And it was safety and it was this and it was CART. It was versus IRL. I'm not going to get into all that because I'm not a versed expert into it. But if it is the speed, we will see next year, not this year, because the 101st running doesn't sound nearly as sexy as the 100th running.
Sure.
And we'll see. But again, they've got a ton of events. We've put them on our Facebook page. You can take a look, WGCLradio.com. The track schedule is up there for the whole week. When's carb day? When are the concerts? Yeah, they're trying everything to get people in the joint. Remember, the reserve seating is sold out, but general admission, so I guess that's infield. I'm not. The website will tell you all this. Is only $40.
Right.
That is not ridiculous for a 5 hour or so event. If you want to break it out hourly, it's you got plenty of stuff happening. And again, they're not going to stick you somewhere where you can't see a video board, where there's not a bathroom,
right,
where there's not concessions or anything else going on.
Assuming you
don't
can
do
see
it
straight.
Well, that's a you problem.
Which is always the problem.
That doesn't come with your ticket. But the infield is no longer called the snake pit. It's called the infield. Now they'll still have some fun in there, but it is not the rowdy couch burning party that it once was.
It seems to me you're starting to recognize more names. And that was a thing back, you know, when we were growing up. You had some real characters. You had some names that you were used to on a regular basis. You had some guys that were two, three, four, five-time winners of this thing, not a bunch of guys that you had a hard time pronouncing as often. How much of it comes down to that? Because I know for NASCAR, that was always a thing for them, is rivalries and names and the characters.
Yeah, and you
can't. Seems to me we haven't had a lot of characters in the 500 or in the open-wheel racing for a while.
Well, they all went to NASCAR. Let's be fair.
Well, some of them did.
Elio Castroneves, Dancing with the Stars. Go ahead, tell me the other one. Sadly, IRL and CART have been known for the on-course tragedies more than really anything else. over the last few years.
You're starting to see more of these names on a regular basis. I mean, Montoya, Cannon,
Where was Montoya?
Hunter Ray.
Came back from NASCAR last year to put this all together.
Right. That's right.
But, yeah, some of the younger kids are coming up. They're sticking with the rides. And again, you have to win races. You can hype Dale Earnhardt Jr. up so much, but until he wins Daytona, it doesn't matter. And he finally did that, and everybody's happy with how that all works itself out. So the best of luck to them. We hope they get a good forecast. There is rain scattered around the entire weekend, so we'll keep our eyes on that for you, and we will have the coverage here. But no, I don't think one race will ever solve what they're doing. They had a race cancel in Boston they had to fix like 2 weeks ago. They had to find a spot for it. And to me, that doesn't scream healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't scream that a lot of people are paying attention. The IRLs, I think, got a contract with NBC Sports Network. Great. They're on TV. They have to be on TV. How can they not be on TV? It's different in Indiana, and that shouldn't be the temperature taker for the entire circuit, I guess would be my point.
Looking at our broadcasting later tonight, the Reds, big-time slide here for the Reds, who are now 15 games out of first, 15-29. They're 1-9 in their last 10 on a seven-game losing streak.
Other than that, it's pretty good baseball.
Yeah, I mean, is this all pitching for the Reds?
It is. It's bad. And a lot of other teams in baseball have really good bullpens. The Reds have the complete opposite of that. We told you that record earlier in the year. They had a streak of 23 games in a row where their bullpen gave up a run, and I think it's 25 of the last 28 now that they have done so. It's ham and eggs when they get good bullpen pitching. It doesn't matter because the starter couldn't do his job. They're struggling to string together big offensive nights at the plate. It is a rebuilding year. This is year two of the three-year plan. I think that's been put out there. This isn't anything shocking.
They've given up 263 runs. The next worst is 226.
Yeah, and last year they had the second most walks in baseball for the bullpen. So this isn't anything just popped up like a weed all of a sudden in a perfectly manicured lawn. Mm-hmm. They know this was coming. And when you rebuild a baseball team, any general manager, baseball junkie will tell you, where do you not spend any money? On middle relief.
Right.
You rotate guys. You try guys. You throw out prospects. Mm-hmm. You make sure you don't burn their years of service to get in any contract stuff. But there's enough free agents. There's enough guys that are being waived and optioned daily. You're hoping to catch lightning in a bottle to save that money to find some pitching, to find some quality hitting to help rebuild this. And they're going to rebuild it through the draft. They're going to rebuild it through the farm system. And you just got to be a little patient there. Still got Joey Votto. Still got Jay Bruce, Brandon Phillips.
Yeah, I mean, the lineup isn't bad looking.
Eugenio Suarez, Devin Mesoraco, if he can get healthy, Tucker Barnhart, Indianapolis kid, Billy Hamilton in center. It shouldn't be as bad as it is, but those guys don't pitch.
Yeah.
Don't forget
that.
They're
not scoring a lot of runs either, roster.
There's a reason why. Number one, they're in the toughest division in baseball, or the Cubs have the best record. And number two, they're just inconsistent, and that's what bad teams are.
But we will have them for you the next three nights, 10 o'clock, as they're out in L.A. trying to turn some things around again on the weekend, Friday and Saturday
in
Milwaukee. We will be back with you Wednesday, 6 o'clock, so tune in then, and we are out of here. You've been in the zone.